Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
Okay, so now we're virtually married. I love it.
Yay.
So welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. You are at the spot, the place where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, the responses are never dull, and we have vampires here. Vampires. Okay, so that's sexier than a vampire any day. We're going to talk about blending a family, how we can de-stress ourselves for the woman entrepreneur, how to really get clear, how to be excited, and how to blend a family. She has a family of five. Can you believe that? Working women, we are just overtaxed, we're overrun, and we really want to get our head around this. Enjoy what we do. Find the joy in what we do, because being an entrepreneur is no joke. It is one of the toughest jobs that you can have, and she's an expert at it. So help us welcome to the edge, Samantha Morris. How are you, Samantha?
I'm really good. Thanks, April. I'm so happy to be talking to you today.
I'm happy to have you. Look at that big old dimple there. On the same side. Look at that. I know.
Yeah. I know. Love it.
It loves it. You can put a cherry in yours. That's pretty deep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of deep, let's go deep with you. Tell us a little bit about your story and how you arrived at this point.
Oh, gosh. No story is a straight line. So I feel like there are so many twists and turns in how I got here. It's probably not good to pick all of them to talk about. But look, it took me a really, really long time to figure out what it is that I really want to do and what makes me happy, because I was one of those ladies that was forever doing things that was the right thing to do. And it would make other people happy if I was, you know, doing this or being good at that. And you know what happens when you're doing things to please other people is you make yourself miserable. So, you know, I my first big career that I have was in the military. So I was in the Navy for 12 years and I absolutely loved the work that I did there. But I was married and I had three children. The pressure was on for me to choose career or family. And that's not a choice that anybody wants to make when they are really passionate and love both. But those two things weren't working together. They just weren't. So I had to make a decision and I chose my family. But in choosing family, I felt like I lost a very, very big part of myself in how I identified. And so I wasn't depressed, but I became very lost and I didn't know what my real purpose was. You know, like I was a parent, but I was very conscious about how I was showing up as a mum, and I was very conscious about what I was showing. You know, at that stage, three little girls I had, the person that I was showing them was not the person that I wanted to be. So it's difficult to try and figure that out and be brave.
Were you showing them the person that you truly were, or the person that you created? Were you living a little bit of the imposter syndrome?
Very much imposter syndrome. And that's hard work to live a life where you're living behind this wall of something fake. It's really high maintenance to do that all the time. And, you know, you crash and burn when you do that. So at nighttime, when my girls went to bed, I felt like I fell in a heap every night. Mm. I was exhausted during the day, fell in a heap at night. And what was I showing them? I felt like I was scattered and directionless. And
then you're also in a male-dominated field, the military. Let's really take it and consider it for what it is, because women, I don't know, we've always had to play second fiddle.
Yeah. Yeah,
what was your role in the Navy? What did you do?
So I worked in logistics and, you know, and it's a fancy name for, you know, working in a warehouse. But
hey, if you can't get the stores to where they need the guns, the bullets, the helmets, the tanks, you know, you were very strategic. People kind of minimize that, but it's not. Yeah. It's very, very important. Very important.
It is very important, you know, and I remember sitting, I did a lot of work with the submarine squadron over here. And I remember sitting in a meeting and I was my department head and I was sitting in a meeting and I had to explain to some, you know, some very important people in the Australian submarine squadron that there was a certain part that I just wasn't able to supply. And that was stopping the submarine from being able to deploy. Ooh. So it, you know, if I told you what it was, you would, it's laughable to think that this one little thing could totally stop a submarine from deploying, but it did. And it was really, really hard to sit in that room and have to say, I'm sorry, but I can't produce this. I can't do it.
Right. And in the military, it's like the theater. You know, the show must go on. You've got to make it happen.
Yes.
Those lives are dependent on it. Sometimes it can be as small as a widget. You know, you can't get that piece to them to get that machinery or that tank or that gun. It's different. Did you deploy a lot? Did you have to leave your family?
No, I didn't. When I was in the military, I'm on husband number two, April. So, well, blended family. But no, when I was in the military, I was married to a submariner. And one person's career has to be identified as the career that's going to be more important. And because my husband was a submariner and because there wasn't enough of them, his career automatically took over mine. So because he was deployed so much, I wasn't, which I didn't mind because, you know, I got to do some really, really cool stuff. Like I had a great, great career. But, you know, at the end of the day, my role in the military did rely on me to deploy at some stage. And that's the decision that I had to make, you know, if I wasn't going to be willing to leave what, you know, I had three children then, I wasn't going to be willing to leave them for extended periods of time and deploy. My career couldn't go any further. They'd implemented all these rules that said you have to deploy in order to be promoted.
Well, I mean, that's a part of the job. And so let me ask you a little bit about being married to a submariner, because my husband was in the military, but he wasn't a submariner, but I got to go on a submarine.
Yeah.
And I say this with the utmost respect to your ex. That was your ex-husband, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. I say this with the utmost respect. Girl, that can make you cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. It can, I mean, because you are underwater, the pressure, your whole psyche has to change. And when you come up from air, I mean, you could be in that submarine for a month, 2 months with no daylight. Mm. Very, very tight quarters. Heaven forbid you have an emergency or a fire. It's different than just being in other aspects. It's like being married to a fighter pilot. These are really intense, ingrained, and that can, again, impact your relationship, because when he comes home, not only does he have to get prepared to reintroduce himself to the normal environment, but immerse himself in the military, you know, in a family life. I know when my husband would come home, we'd have to have a little training. Okay, you got to stop that cussing because their mouths would be filthy. Here, I'm going to feed you some real food. Don't come back as the strong disciplinarian, because things have changed. You got to gradually work yourself into it. So it's a lot of training there. But then you have to have the discipline, because you've been there, you're a woman in the military, and you're a mother. So a lot of that tugging back and forth, it could have been a challenge. I could see how it could have been a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, and for in the circumstance I was in and the type of person I am, you're absolutely right. When my husband came back, he needed to de-stress, but he also wanted to step into that traditional male role in the house, the one that I'd been doing for 6 months. And so the type of person I am, I was like, I don't want to take a back seat. Mm-hmm. I can do all of this stuff myself. And so, you know.
And your kids are looking at him like with a side eye, is like, dude, really?
Yeah.
You've been in for 6 months and now you're coming here. You're
stepping on mom's toes.
Right. You have this military mindset of this has to be done and that has to be done. Who are you? So I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
So you moved beyond that and you got out of the military. Then where does your career go?
Oh, my career. I had no idea what to do with myself. Hmm. On one hand, it was really exciting because, you know, fresh out of the military, you're very, very well respected in the workplace because of the work ethic that that military personnel have. So I was offered some really interesting work. So I tried a few things, and what I found was that because I had worked my way up a little bit in the military and I had been used to running things myself, and then I was also used to, like I say, my husband was away most of the time. I was used to running things by myself at home. So when it came to working for someone else, you know, my natural sort of personality was to identify what didn't work so well and try and help fix it. And that's what I did in the Navy. You know, I was given departments that weren't working well and said, go fix. So when I tried to do that for other people, it wasn't so well received.
Well, because so, you're bossy now.
I'm bossy, yeah.
And that is okay, but you realized it. And a lot of people don't realize what they have to do and how they have to edit and shift their mindset, especially from a military perspective, because it's very rigorous. It's very mechanical. Someone had said to me, and it kind of offended me, oh, you know, your husband was brainwashed. No, he wasn't. Well, it is. Yes and no. It's a form of mind control. There's a lot of things that brainwash us. Love, sex, religion, drugs. There's a lot of things. But it's a programming, but it's also a discipline. It's a discipline. It's a law and order. It's a certain expectation, which I don't think is bad. I don't know if I would have been able to survive the military because I'm a bit of a ball buster. I'm not one for rules. I'm really not. Where my husband is, okay, baby, this is how it is. This is what we got to do, blah, 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 down to, you know, how you make a bed. Me, I'm like, well, let's deviate from this. And, you know, but if there's no rules, there's chaos. So you get into this corporate world and you really don't find that that is something that appeases you because of your background and what you've been through. And you, maybe at this point you've been divorced, you have these children, you fall in love again. How did you reset, Samantha?
Oh, gosh. When everything fell apart in the space of 1 year, April. So I left the military and I moved back to my hometown. And I did that because my husband was away a lot and I was no... The Navy's very supportive of families, and you would understand that. But I wasn't a Navy wife as such because I'd been a serving member. So I didn't quite feel like I fit into that role. So I moved back to my hometown to be near my family, and they were going to support me raising my children. But this very sad news came 3 months after I arrived that my mum had to go to hospital for surgery and they found she had cancer and she passed 3 months after that.
Wow, that was pretty quick.
It was very quick. And at the same time, my husband and I were separating. So I lost my career, then my mum, and then my husband in the space of 12 months. So I really felt like everything just crashed down on top of me. But you've got kids, you've got to pick yourself up and do something. So because working for other people wasn't for me, I tried a few different businesses because I thought I'll just work for myself, then I can do things my way. But I didn't put much thought into the type of business I was going to run. I just jumped into any kind of opportunity that was available. So I tried, you know, that I tried party plan, direct selling. I was a mortgage broker for a little while doing my own thing there. I tried all these different things, but I was doing those. I jumped into those businesses for all the wrong reasons. I wasn't interested in any of that. Mm. I was interested in helping people, but not through those avenues. So I kind of got a bit of a taste for running my own business, but I hadn't found that thing that really excited me about business. So I decided I'd go back to school and, you know, talk about imposter syndrome. I felt like I needed some kind of piece of paper to say that I could do something.
Right. You need validation.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. So I went back to school and again, terrible. I got bored at school. So mm-hmm. then I thought, I'm going to work part-time for that little bit of energy. I'll go to school part-time. I'll do a little bit of everything because, you know, why not? When you're confused and you don't know what you want to do, you're kind of grabbing at any straw that's out there. So that was me for a little while. And then I met my husband. Mm-hmm. I've still got him.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and that too, falling in love again.
Yeah.
And blending a family. You know, you're a working woman trying to find her identity. Mm. You've had your independence because you've had to raise these children. You've had to reset. You're trying to find a career, but you're trying to make time for love too. And then introducing this man into your world. He's got kids. You've got kids. You know, sometimes that can be a recipe for disaster, but you made it work.
Well, he didn't have any kids.
Oh, you have your two kids together?
Yeah. So all of the kids are mine, but only two are biologically his. Mm. So I had to bring a new father figure into the picture for my daughters, my three daughters. And then, of course, then I had two children with my husband. So then it was introducing new babies to my daughters as well. So that was hard to navigate. But I think it was good to have a relationship with somebody that wasn't involved in the military at all, because my identity for so long was tied up in that. It was good to be totally disassociated with it and to be able to start again and say, okay, I've got to figure out who I am. This man is nothing to do with the military at all, doesn't know anything about how it all works and doesn't see me in that role.
Right, right.
Because, you know, that you're stereotyped as a female in the military.
Yeah.
You know, so it was good to step out of that and not have to wear that. And then have the opportunity to figure out, okay, well, who am I then? Because I'm not military anymore. I'm not involved in it. I'm not in a relationship that's involved in it. So now, who am I?
So now tell me about your first date.
With my husband.
Yeah.
Oh, he hates our first date. So we actually, he invited me to his house. I know it wasn't very exciting, but we don't really do dating.
It wasn't very exciting.
no, but we'd met. So when he asked me out, I went to his house and then we went to go get pizza. So that was our big exciting date. But you know, it's really funny, April, and I still tease him about this, is that like he had this really cool car. You know, he was young and single, and so he had this really cool car, and he tried to do a burnout at the traffic lights. Oh. It didn't quite work. So I still tease him about that, his lack of driving skills that night. He was so nervous.
Well, that's when the rubber meets the road.
Yeah. Literally. He was trying so hard to impress me, and it just didn't quite work, you know.
But, you know, you took a chance. You're a risk taker.
Yeah.
And that's what women have to be when they step out into a different career. Now, you're a franchise owner of Fempire. Yes. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, Fempire. Goodness me. Fempire is all about working with women to help them start and grow businesses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's so perfect for me because I from where I've come from, of not knowing what I want to do, but knowing that it's got to be somewhere around business, helping women to figure out what they really want to do, and not even want, but what they're meant to do with themselves. Mm. And as opposed to what other people tell them they're supposed to do and who they're supposed to be, helping women figure that out and then helping them actually do it. It's the best thing, I think. I just feel genuinely lucky to be able to do that. Well, because I know like what it feels like to be lost.
Feels like it's almost as good as eating chocolate.
Yeah, I do that too.
You know, as we were talking, Sarah, it's the ideal client. And really, what does that look like? Because everybody is not cookie cutter. You're going to have to do a lot of work. We were bantering back and forth about what it takes to be a success, starting with the person from infancy or getting into it within adolescence, or you got some old fart that it's my way or the highway and they don't want to change. All of that is different. What is your ideal client?
My ideal client is somebody who really believes in the business that they want to start, and they have to have enough belief in themselves to actually go on the journey, because business ownership is very much about working out who you are and what you want out of life. And that involves asking some really tough questions. Mm-hmm. So you have to be willing to ask those questions of yourself, or willing to be asked and be willing to answer. You've got to work on you in order to work on business.
And you can't have an unrealistic expectation. You know, Samantha can't do everything. You have to do it. People get bored. You know, I was asking her how long is her coaching program, and she said 12 months. I told her, bravo, mine is 5 hours, you know. But I have a different strategy. I'm looking for someone that's already established. I'm, again, swarming over it with an eagle eye view. I'm trying to help you clean it up and get it going. But when you are looking at it from its conception, what is it you want to do? I mean, you may think that you want to open a nail salon and end up, you know, owning a bakery. It's really what your passion is, and she's going to help pull that out. How do you work with women to really figure out what is their heart desire? Do you do a lot of journaling? Is there meditation? Do you have them flip through magazines? What's the process a little bit?
Well, the process, I don't have a defined process. It starts with a conversation, and you know, I admit that I talk, you know, I talk quite a bit, or I ask a lot of questions. So that conversation, that conversation could go on for quite a while, but I really like to learn about the person behind the business, because I've got to understand, you know, whether they're willing to do the work when it gets hard, or, you know, if something doesn't work out the first time the way you expect it to, you know, is that person then just going to give up? Because their heart's not in it if they're willing to give up at the first hurdle. And the other thing is, I would have laughed at you if you'd said this to me, you know, a few years ago, but I like to get people to create a vision board for their business, because I think I really like to look at the psychology behind why they're selecting certain images. And I think that that tells the story of the subconscious rather than the conscious.
That's deep. That's deep. Vision boards. I'm a big proponent of vision boards too, but I create a vision board that also has obstacles and challenges, maybe stop signs, maybe roadblocks, because everything is not going to be a straight line. Like you said, there are going to be bumps in the road. You are going to have to detour. You're going to have to back up. You're going to have to make a U-turn. All of these things, you're going to have to ask for help.
Yes.
And you know what? You're not going to always win. You're going to lose some money. Trust me. That is exactly the best teacher is, ooh, I know not to do that anymore, because you're making an investment. And your mistakes are really your best teachers.
Absolutely. I don't think that you would find any really successful business person that hasn't had spectacular, I don't like the word failure because I don't think there are any failures. It's just the universe telling you that you've got to go in a different direction. Mm-hmm. You've got to listen to that. And I don't want people to ever stop because something hasn't worked out the way they've expected to. I want them to take that expectation and point it in a new direction.
Right. Let me ask you about multiple revenue streams.
Yes.
You've got to have multiple revenue streams, brains.
Yes, you do.
You might have a flower shop, for example. Okay, so you have a flower shop. So why don't you also have classes where you teach how to make floral arrangements? Why don't you also have classes on botanical gardens, on how to grow these flowers and where they come from? Why don't you have classes on how to be sustainable and renewable? There's different avenues. So don't just get pigeonholed in thinking, oh, okay, I'm sitting here and nobody's coming to buy a bouquet of flowers. You got to work that machine, correct?
Absolutely. Yes. When I'm starting out with a client, I ask them what their end game is. You know, what sort of money do they want to be making? And I'll talk about money now. What sort of money do they want to be making in a year? And they'll tell me. And then I'll say, and they've come to me because, for example, we use your flower shop because they want to sell flowers. But they haven't done the thought process of, oh, I'm actually going to have to sell X amount of flowers to make that kind of money. That's kind of impossible. Not impossible, but that's really hard work. Having multiple revenue streams, that's the way to go to really grow a strong business. Foundation, you know, it's the table analogy, isn't it? A table doesn't stand up with one leg. It needs the four legs, that big table.
That's right. Well, you are big table. That's for sure. So tell me a little bit about the coaching, the workshop, and the sisterhood.
Okay, so coaching, goodness me. Coaching is a fascinating thing to get into. I started coaching business owners a little while ago, just because my husband and I started a business 16 years ago now. And along the way, people asked me how I did it and if I'd help them do things. So I didn't know that what I was doing was coaching. I suppose it goes back, I don't know, it's not, coaching hasn't been as prevalent in Australia as probably what it is over in the US. It's sort of coming into its own now, but.
Well, let me define this. Let me shape this a little bit because Everyone's not a coach. There's a lot of people that are still sitting on the bench that are trainees that think that they're coaches, that are disgruntled employees, and they've left a particular job, and now they think they're the subject matter expert, and they can tell everybody to do it their way. But coaching is a lot of mindset. It's also looking at an individual where they are and where they aspire to be, not where we want to take them. It's not our journey. You want to bring out the best in them. You want to mold them. You want to mentor them. You want to encourage them. You want to excite them. You want them to miss some of the pitfalls in life, dodge the bullet, how to establish their business, how to look for areas where they're weak and to fill in those gaps. And you've got to be their cheerleader. But I think one of the most important things in coaching also is that I mentor and coach a lot of people. I want them to outgrow me. I don't want to be their coach for the next 3-5 years. I want you to take what I have, combine it with what you have, create the secret sauce for success, maybe get another coach that might be able to drive you in a different direction. Stay close to that person, but coaching is really about pushing you forward. Look at world-class athletes. Football, soccer, gymnastics, they really deep dive into the person that they are. And coaches have to understand what a responsibility you have. You are holding someone's life in the balance. They are counting on you. They are looking to you for direction. It's like raising children. And if you mistreat that or misguide that, you can do a lot of damage to individuals as well. So be careful when you're looking for a coach, brains, and where you're investing your money. If I have a coach, I want to see what I want exuding out of your pores. I want it looking like acne all over your face. Would you agree?
I love the way you've articulated all that. I think if you're having a conversation with a coach, I think that one thing to look out for is the coach talking more than you? Because I think a coach's job is to ask questions that make you think and make you feel and make you want.
Absolutely.
Like I don't think it's the coach's job to sit there and tell you what to do, A, B, C, D, just follow this path, do exactly what I say. I think it's a coach's job to encourage you to create your own path and your own journey.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, yes. They are different, and that's why there's no point in, you know, there's so many ads out there for things that where people are selling a secret that will work for everybody. And it frustrates me because, you know, it might work for 1 in 10 people, 1 in 20 people, but in the meantime, there's 9 people that become disenfranchised with a coach because they haven't got results. And it makes me sad because when you get the right coach, working with a coach can absolutely explode your brain. And that's really the part that we've got to work on the brain and we've got to work on the heart.
Absolutely. You know? And, you know, I have a checklist. I ask them their experience, their knowledge. What is their success? I want some testimonials. What are some options and some choices? I want to be able to be a little combative with my coach. You know, we can agree to disagree because that's what life is about. We're going to hit this crossroad, this intersection where things are going to be different. Are you going to buy into my ideas and help me mold that? Or is it my way and the highway? And with a military mindset, it can work either way. It can be a double-edged sword. Tell me a little bit about the workshops that you host, facilitate, and coordinate.
So workshops, what I do with the training programs, because we run a couple of different ones and some of them involve a coaching element and some of them are purely training, teaching people how to, you know, market their business, teaching people how to pay attention to their finances and what that means for your business. Because I don't believe in just teaching, you know, you can go to school and learn marketing and finance and all of those business functions, but learning about them and then how to apply them in your business, that's a different type of learning. And that's the type of learning that I'm trying to bring to people. But not only learning the functions of business, but recognizing how those functions make you feel and whether you're the right person to be performing those functions.
Right.
How those different elements of business fit into what you're trying to create with your business. Because, you know, I love seeing that the world is moving more and more towards people who are starting businesses because they have a passion. And it's not just about making money anymore. And money is a really important part. I never want to shy away from people making money because we need money to affect change in the world.
Right.
So we've got to make money. We've got to put roofs over our heads. We've got to put food in our bellies. But making money that's tied to something that you're really passionate about, I think that just takes business to a whole new level. And I love seeing that that's the way the world's moving.
Well, a couple things I want to touch on in that area as well. Understanding your value and understanding your worth.
Mm.
You know, making the ask and closing on the deal. Women, him and ha. Well, I've got to get it co-signed by this person. What do you think? Well, I'm not sure. I'm scared. Put in your big girl panties and step out there in the big world, you know, like a person in the military and jump out that airplane with a parachute and pray to God that it opens, because being an entrepreneur is one of the toughest jobs you will ever have. Creating, building, molding, getting paid, building relationships and starting that all over again is huge. Marketing. People don't know how to market. And everyone's different philosophy. It's not cookie cutter. It's not something that's textbook. It's ever evolving. But one of the most significant parts of that is to be visible. If people do not know that you exist, it's a moot point. You have to have your image out there. You've got to have your logo, because I'm a logo queen, okay? Really, I love my logo. But it represents who you are. When you see that Coca-Cola, or you see that Nike check, or you see that Walmart, or that Target bullseye, you know exactly who that is, whether they have their names tattooed at the bottom or not. Visibility. Being your own advocate. I look at some of the greatest marketers in the world. Martha Stewart, P. Diddy, Muhammad Ali. If you did not believe what they told you, not their team, what they told you, if you are not able to represent your brand, you know, I'll have people that'll come on the show, they make an investment to be marketed and promoted, and you never see them share the video. You never see them go in and like their own work. I'm not a magician. I'm a marketer. I get you out there. Having things that really represent who you are and the right team, and also being innovative. You got to be consistent, though. You know, a lot of times people change, well, I'm rebranding. Okay, that means you're going hardcore. Everything about you is about to change, but it also has to have a relationship and a correlation to who you were previously, so that that relationship is connected. Am I right about that?
You are right about that. I love that you bring up rebranding, because people sometimes think that, you know, a rebrand is going to all automatically explode their business. But April, you know what goes into a rebrand. And the first thing that people have to get right in their branding is figuring out exactly what is that message that you want that brand to say to people. Mm-hmm. And it's not about, oh, but I really like the color blue. I want my brand to be blue. People have to understand why that's important and what that's representing. It's not just about the color blue. It's not just about a particular font. It's not just about, you know, what social media platform you're on. It's not about any of those individual things. It's about the collection of those things and what they're saying to people. Mm-hmm. And I think people so often just use marketing as an excuse rather than using marketing to share a message.
Well, they don't understand. They don't understand what marketing is. They really don't. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, brains, because you don't know everything. But they're very standoffish. Oh, well, you know, or a book, for example. They'll write a book and they will never promote the book. A publisher is to get that piggy to market. Mm-hmm. You got to put that sucker on the auction block and you have to sell it. You have to continuously sell it. It has to be there next to you like your kids forever. It is your body of work. It represents who you are and what you've done. And you've done that. Share with us the anthology. Let me see a picture of that book that you have. That you've written. Where's it at? Let me see your book.
Oh, my book?
Yes.
Oh, my book's not published until March.
Oh, that's right. You're okay.
It's not published. Oh, yes. Yeah, it's March. It's published. So
Well, it's gonna be published in March. Okay, so now let's dial back. Let's talk a little bit about that. This is the first time that you will be contributing to an anthology. So you'll be a brand new author, right?
I will be, yes.
Okay. Now, I've written 3 books. I've self-published 3 books, and I refuse, me personally, to give Amazon a dime. But I sold 20,000 copies of those books out of the trunk of my car. Okay?
I love that.
You got to be a hustler, baby. You got to be a hustler. And that has to be your calling card. But understand this. When you write a book, if you write it for, you know, cathartic reasons, you want to get something off your chest, that's one thing. If you give that book to people, it becomes a pamphlet. If they buy the book from you, now it is a part of their library, a bona fide literary work that people have made an investment in, and believe and trust they will read that book. So don't look at your publisher with a side eye if your book is not selling. It's your responsibility to market, as we just talked about, that book, to let people know that, hey, I'm in this anthology on page 20 to 26. I'm not lost in here. This is my contribution. This is my calling card. This is what I do. What do you think about it? You have to have online book signings. You've got to be able to run specials and promotions, have chats, read excerpts. You've got to get it out there forever. Because when my books, I said, you know what, if they're still selling the Bible, good Lord, no, I'm still selling mine.
That is so true. That is so true. Do you know what, April? I think it's fascinating when I talk to new female entrepreneurs, and the first thing they say to me when we start talking marketing is, oh no, I don't want my face to be anywhere. I don't want to be seen. It. If you don't believe in what you're doing, no one else is going to.
Give me that look one more time, girl. Let me get a close up on that look. Do that again. Because it's you, you know, it's you. And I get it. Okay. Because the world of social media is scary.
Yeah.
It's scary. You're going to be subjected to some criticism, mm-hmm. but you also have a choice of what you put out there. You also have a choice to hit pause before you put your image out there, because there's some people out there. I've been kind of looking at a couple things today, and I'm a little, am I judging? Absolutely. Because it is not reflecting them in their best light. Hmm. Like, example, a woman with body image. I was looking at the two things today. Okay, I'm fat and fluffy and I love it, but everything is not for public exposure. Correct. I don't need to be an exhibitionist, because what you're doing is you are reiterating, in my opinion, your insecurity. You're trying so hard to push out there and to influence people in a certain kind of way that this is who I am. And, you know, and look at me, and, you know, I've got five rolls on the back, and I'm naked and I'm free. Well, you know, all of that doesn't necessarily, you don't need to show up that authentic. There needs to be some discretion, because people are going to judge you. And then when you get snarky comments, your feelings are hurt. So you need to really dial back, maybe run it by someone else. Ultimately, you are going to be the one in charge. One image of that, two image of that, that's fine. But to make this your mantra of just, you know, I'm just going to be this naked person. You know, I see some celebrities that, girl, put some clothes on.
Yeah, I think we need to be a little bit more respectful of who we want to be seen as. And you can't, when you get backlash for doing things like that, you can't then turn around and say that, you know, you can't say that you don't expect it, because when you put yourself out there, there are going to be people that don't agree with your philosophies, don't like the way you look, don't like the way you think, and don't sit in the same spaces where your heart sits. That's going to happen. So you kind of, you need to expect, but you also need to be resilient enough and respectful of yourself enough to be, like you say, be careful about what you are putting out there, be authentic in what you're putting out there, but you don't have to show all of yourself to do that.
You need to be reserved. It's just like in a relationship. You know, the first thing you do on the first date is talk about the ex. People don't want to hear that. It has to be new. It has to be fresh. It has to be exciting. People have to want to know what's next. You have to whet their appetite. You don't tell them every single thing, because then there's nothing to look forward to.
No, you've got to, it's like a book, isn't it? Social media has to read like a book. You've got to give a little bit of the story to keep people reading.
That's right. You got to give a teaser. Talk about sisterhood. You know, women are a tough crowd. You know, they're like crabs in a barrel. They will pull you down in a heartbeat. It's hard to build a community of women. And now the new thing is that we are in the age of Aquarius. That it is much gentler, it is much kinder than the age of Pisces. It's a feminine energy. But you know, like I know, Samantha, there's still a lot of isms. Sexism, racism, classism, stereotypes, There's gender and sexual fluidity. Now everybody wants to be a pronoun instead of, mm-hmm. you know, a noun. There's a lot going on in the world of sisterhood. And judging one another, I don't have a problem with judgment. I'm open to it. Now, whether I feed into it and how I respond to it,
yeah,
that's different. But yes, because it makes me look at things with a more critical, analytical eye. Is there something that I am exuding? Is there something I could be doing better? You know, you have to be open to that. And the only way that you can do that is to hear it from an outside influence, but also be able to process that. And that's what sisters are supposed to do. We are supposed to be able to say, hey, gently, kindly, and don't just cut me down. Cut me down, but give me an opportunity to do better by some suggestions. I don't need a problem describer. I need a solution seeker. Your thoughts?
Yes. Oh, April, I totally agree with that. I just think there is nothing more frustrating than when someone tells me no. And it's not the word no I have the problem with. It's the word no that isn't backed up by anything constructive.
Right.
I'll tell you a little story about my son, and this might explain the way I feel about sisterhood. My son is changing schools, and he was going to a Catholic school, and he's going to just go to an ordinary public school. And he said to me, do I have to do religious education at this new school? And I said, no. I said, it's optional at that school. And he said, why do you make me do it? And I said to him, the reason you must do religious education is because you cannot make decisions for yourself about religion if you're not educated on it. That's how I feel about everything. Unless you educate yourself on something, you can't make a good decision.
You can't make an informed decision. And that is the pros and the cons, just like what's going on with the pandemic right now. Mm. Do I do this? Do I do that? Oh, I got my information on Facebook. Newsflash, brains. The Facebook is not the gospel. Look at your medical history. I took the vaccine. I wear a mask. I stay 6 feet apart. And I had never been tested for COVID. And my daughter brought a test home, and I took it, and I was free. So I'm protecting me. I love you, Samantha, but when it comes down to it, I'm looking out for me first. Mm. What is best for me? I looked at my family history. I looked at, you know, had I ever had a reaction to anything like this before? Has there ever been a pandemic in my lifetime? I'm almost 60 years old. I've never seen anything like this. I don't know anything about tuberculosis. The worst thing that came out was AIDS. And, you know, you had to be getting down and bumping uglies with somebody or transferring blood to transfer that. But the ignorance around that had so many people isolated. So, again, it's about having informed information and making your own. Do you hear that, brains? Your own decision, not Samantha's, not April's, but being able to do that. And you did the perfect thing with your son. You know, God is real to me, is to you, but your son has to find a personal relationship with God for himself, based upon not what the priest says, not what the, you know, this happened, but that one-on-one conversation and what the texts say and how that resonates in your heart. So you told him absolutely right. You can't say that, oh, you know, well, I don't believe because of that. Well, it wasn't because you weren't exposed or you were, you know, you were exposed to it. And the same thing with sisterhood. You have to be able to be exposed to it and love it and want it. Now, everybody's not going to be your sister. Okay. Everybody's not going to be there. But you, again, have to know your boundaries, what you like, and work what works well for you. So tell a little bit, my brains, how to get in contact with you to become a participant in Fempire.com. And also, before you do that, though, how does that become a franchise? How do you franchise that out? How does that work?
Oh, that's a really good question. So the founder of Fempire is Marnie Lefebvre, and she was coaching women and was so overwhelmed by the response that she got, because when she when she thought about this, there were not many female coaches coaching women here in Australia. So she realized that she wasn't able to cope with the demand for female coaches for women here. So she decided that people, if she was going to send people out there as female coaches, they not only needed to be coaches, but they needed to be business owners themselves. So, and that's why she decided to franchise, because now we all own our own companies. So not only are we coaching, but we are, you know, we're walking the walk ourselves. And, you know, I, as I said, dallied in a lot of different businesses, but this one really resonated. And this is the importance of finding out what it is that's really in your heart when it comes to business, because that's when everything else seems to align.
But it's a social psychology too.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, it's hard to do the deep dive. You can do Myers-Briggs and check out your personality type. You can do an Enneagram and find out what your, you know, personality types are very important. You can visit with a spiritual healer and see what's going on. But innately, you have to make that decision. You have to walk that, because you're going to make an investment, not just of your money, but of your time. You'll get more money, brains, but you won't get necessarily any more time. Your days is numbered, believe me. Mm-hmm. They're numbered. Tell them how to get in contact with you. I would really love for them to work with you. You just seem like such a love.
Oh, thank you. Look, I'm contactable through my website, which is samanthamorris.vampirecoach.com.au. And what's really exciting, April, is that although I'm in Australia, I do work with ladies around the world, which is something that I love about the pandemic, is the fact that, you know, everyone has been so comfortable now working online that it's really pulled down a lot of borders. So that's exciting. But, you know, the franchise is coming to the United States.
Shut the front door. Really?
It's happening. A beautiful, beautiful woman from Ohio is our first, and she's amazing. We can't wait to work with her. So.
Wow.
So it's happening on your own door. Well, not quite your doorstep because you're California, but
you know, no, it's Ohio.
Close enough.
That's where my people are from originally.
Oh, really?
That's America's heartland. There's a lot going on there. And what I find is that women are, they're very progressive. They're very smart, but they don't tend to be as risky as we are here on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. You know, because we're kind of hoo-hoo, you know, hippie. Okay, well, you know, we'll eat this and we'll exercise this and we'll metaphysical and you know, manifest that. But they're a little bit more traditional. So this is great. This is really great for the mindset. And there's a lot of opportunity there in Ohio. The industries have changed. There was a lot of manufacturing. There was a lot of farming and agriculture, but there's opportunities to really expand and go into technology, to go into environmental, wind generation. So women really take a look at that. Oh, I got goose pimples when I thought about that. I'm going to have to turn on some of my online, give me her information, because I'm going to turn on some of my family members. I want them to be more progressive. There was a lot of manufacturing of tires and tractors and all that kind of stuff, but now it's a new day. You go to Ohio and it's pretty desolate. You are an absolute queen of everything. I'm so proud of you. I salute you.
Oh, thank you, April.
And you've done great work. You will continue to do great work. Please come back and update me when the book is released. I want you to come and read an excerpt of the book so that people know exactly where you are, as well as the contributors to the book. Brains, get involved with the Fempires, okay? Get your fangs out. And do your thing, because it's a great, great opportunity. Thank you so much for being here with me on The Edge. Where is the postcard, Brains? I don't want y'all to get lost. I want you to know exactly where you are. Yes, I love it. I love it. So continue to do the great work that you're doing. And Brains, I need you to go in, like, love, subscribe, edit, leave a comment. This is how we grow. Okay. Our skin is not that thick anymore. We're thinning it out. Because we want to know, we want to better and up our game so that we can help you level up. So it doesn't hurt our feelings, you know, if a little criticism, you know, we know how to edit and filter. We know how to take it and process it. It could be very valid. It could be something that really helps us, because we don't know everything.
Nope.
believe it or not. All right. I'll talk to you again really soon. Okay. Thank you so much, Samantha.
Thanks, April.
All right. Bye, brains.